Good morning. Today is, all of a sudden I've forgotten what day it is. Today is the 25th of June. It's a Thursday, and that's why I'm confused, because usually this meeting is on a Friday. I'm Gary Gramling, Chairman of the Housing Commission Board. I'm calling this meeting to order at 9:01 on the 25th of June, 2015. I have a little bit of housekeeping I have to go through first, so bear with me. It's the script. And I'll start with the members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must fill out a speaker request form. The forms are over there in the corner next to the door. Speakers normally are limited to 3 minutes. Collective testimony by those who support or oppose an item shall be limited to no more than 15 minutes total per side. The public may ask for an item to be pulled from the consent agenda once it's been suggested and passed, or at least once it's been proposed. Comments on non-agenda items are heard at the beginning of each meeting. Please fill out a white-colored speaker request form before the meeting starts and hand it to the recording secretary, Angie Rosati Rios, who's over here in this corner. She hasn't misbehaved, but the corner is a safe spot for her. To speak on a matter listed on the agenda, please complete a speaker request form and submit it to the recording secretary before the item is called. If you intend to speak in opposition to the item, please fill out a pink-colored form. If you plan to speak in support, fill out a gold-colored form. Having covered the mandatories there, I have no speaker request forms for non-agenda items, so we'll move past that. And next we have commissioner comments. Commissioners, do any of you have anything you'd like to comment upon? Seeing no indication of such, happy commissioners this morning. We'll go for the report by the president and chief executive officer, Mr. Gentry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as always, I've got a handful of items I want to just draw the board's attention to. Events that have occurred since the last board meeting, which has been a long time, is May the 8th. On May the 20th, we participated in the grand opening of Mesa Commons, and Commissioner Hubbard participated in that with us, as also did Senior Vice President Debbie Ruane. As you recall, Mesa Commons is a 77-unit affordable housing partnership between the San Diego Housing Commission and Palm Communities. It consists of 1 to 3 bedroom apartments and is located along El Cajon Boulevard. So it's another addition to our affordable housing inventory here in San Diego. Wonderful work by Debbie Ruane and her staff in making this happen. Also, as you may have seen in the press, there is a water conservation effort going through the state, and we're going to have a presentation on the Housing Commission's part in that later in the board meeting this morning when Ms. Ruane and her staff do a presentation of that in a workshop. But suffice it to say that we are doing our share. We're reaching out to a lot of folks, and I'll leave the details on that to be discussed by Debbie later in the morning. On June the 2nd, the United Way of San Diego County released a report confirming the success of Project 25, which, as you remember, uses a housing first model to provide housing for chronically homeless individuals. The Housing Commission, in 2011 awarded some 25 federal sponsor-based housing vouchers for Project 25. These vouchers have an annual value of just under $189,000 per year. The sponsor-based housing vouchers are awarded to nonprofit organizations that supply supportive services to homeless San Diegans. And according to the report that the United Way, which sponsored this effort, issued, the net savings to the San Diego region for the full calendar years of 2012 and 13 totaled $3.5 million, which was a 67% reduction in public spending for these individuals who, as we refer to, are the most frequent users of public services. So although it costs the Housing Commission some voucher costs, and it costs the United Way some services costs to make this program work, It saved the community a lot of money, $3.5 million. The report was prepared by the Fermanian Business and Economic Institute at Point Loma Nazarene University. And in front of you are a number of photos that correspond with the events I'm mentioning. Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer Jeff Davis spoke at this news conference. And there's also an article attached and a United Way news release attached as well. Is another good example of the Housing Commission's approach to dealing with homelessness here in San Diego, working with partners, and every little bit helps. In this case, it was more than a little bit of help financially. Also, there's a photo in here of your CEO. On May the 13th, I was honored to receive the California Housing Consortium's 2015 Housing Hall of Fame Award, and the chairman will probably say Housing Hall of Shame, but it's Housing Hall of Fame Award for work in the public sector. The CHC is an advocate for the production and preservation of affordable housing for low and moderate income Californians. The award recognizes contributions toward advancing the cause of affordable housing. In this particular case, it mainly reflected age and mileage, I think. But I wanted to let you know about that. Also, in closing, there's a booklet in front of you that I will draw your attention to. Last week, the Housing Commission was honored to host an annual meeting of an organization called the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities. Their summer conference was held here. And as part of this conference, we took the delegates on a bus tour of our properties. And Debbie and Maria and I have talked that this is something we need to put together for you all as well, particularly given the number of relatively new board members that we've got here at the commission. CLAFA, or the council, is composed of the largest 75 or 80 agencies in the country. And just before a conference that had about 80 members, we took people who came in a day early for the tour, about 42 of their members on this bus tour. And we visited some 22 developments that were located in downtown San Diego and Barrio Logan. We did not get out of the downtown core area and Barrio Logan. And I think that by the time these delegates left to go back home Friday, about half of them are ready to move here. And not just because of the weather, a good bit because, and I say this with all due modesty, this agency is doing some wonderful work. It's the result of some first-class policy leaderships by City Council and by you guys, and also by some very able execution by staff. We look good. And we served the city well. We were pleased to have Councilmember Todd Gloria as our keynote speaker over lunch the first day of the conference, and other presentations at the conference included Jeff Davis, Debbie Ruane, Maria Velasquez. So there are also photos in here covering those. So it was a very good event, and I very much appreciate this board moving its regular board meeting from last Friday to today to accommodate the conference. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report.
Thank you very much, and I'm not going to abuse you by calling that the Hall of Shame, because we're very proud that you are a member of our organization, and we know the good work you do. He's letting his southern roots come in by picking on himself like that. Okay, now I'd like to propose the following items be removed to the consent agenda. Those items are item 100, 101, 103, 104, and 105. Is there a second? Okay, before we call for a vote, I'm going to allow counsel to speak up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With respect to item 100, Commissioner Davis will abstain from participation and voting on that matter in accordance with the provisions of Government Code Section 87103. Ms. Davis is employed by the contractor, which is the subject of this matter, and she will not participate. I request that this matter be incorporated in the official records of the commission.
Thank you. Is there any discussion regarding the consent agenda or the proposed consent agenda? Seeing no indication of such, what I'm going to do is hold two votes on this. For purposes of moving item 100 to the consent agenda, all those, with one abstention, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Let the record reflect that we had five positive votes and one abstention. For the remainder of the proposed consent agenda, 101, 103, 104, and 105, how do you vote? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The consent agenda is approved. Moving along, we have the approval of the minutes for the May 8, 2015 regular meeting. You've all had an opportunity to review those, and is there a motion? Okay, it's been moved. Approval of the minutes of the May 8th meeting. Is there a second?
Yes.
We have 2 seconds. Okay. And I didn't, I'm amiss, I didn't identify. The motion was made by Commissioner Surdy, and the motion was seconded by both Commissioners Davis and Hubbard. All in favor of approval of the minutes as proposed, indicate by saying aye. Opposed? Let the record reflect that the vote was 5 in favor and 1 abstention by Commissioner Tussin because he was absent at that meeting. So, moving on, we'll go to item 102. The fiscal year 2016 Section 8 Administrative Plan. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and Council. I'm Azucena Valladolid, Vice President of the Rental Assistance Division. With me today is Maria Christopher, Senior Program Analyst of the Rental Assistance Division. HUD requires that all public housing agencies maintain a board-approved administrative plan that contains the current policies by which it governs its rental assistance programs. On March 19, 2015, the board approved the fiscal year 2016 Moving to Work annual plan. The San Diego Housing Commission must now incorporate these initiatives into its administrative plan in preparation for implementation. In addition, the new fiscal year 2016 administrative plan includes 5 other noteworthy changes to the policies regarding the administration of our Housing Choice Voucher Section 8 program, which include an updated definition of homelessness. Follow-up quality control inspections will be conducted after utilities turned on in a unit to determine if appliances and fixtures are functioning in accordance with housing quality standards and Housing Commission policy. Allowing the Housing Commission greater flexibility to conduct special inspections on a landlord's inventory in order to increase its quality control and revert landlords back to an annual inspection cycle based on inspection results. Allowing the Housing Commission to use the coordinated assessment housing placement methodology in lieu of a waiting list for the sponsor-based subsidies homeless initiative. And transitioning the elderly and disabled households to a biannual recertification cycle so all Housing Choice Voucher Section 8 families are on the same recertification cycle. A summary of the administrative plan changes is included in the board report for your review, and we respectfully seek the board's approval of the fiscal year 2016 Section 8 administrative plan and the implementation of the new policy. Maria and I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Commissioner Tussin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What do you mean by wanting to inspect tenant inventory? Are you talking about having the ability to go in and inspect their facilities, their living area?
While we are currently practicing this, what we would like to do is clarify in our Section 8 administrative plan that in order to increase our quality control of the inspections that we conduct, we would like to continue to inspect a landlord's inventory as opposed to just a landlord's specific unit. So, for example, a tenant can call us and say that their unit is less than par. We currently go out and conduct a special inspection to determine the viability and if it meets housing quality standards. if we receive multiple complaints, or if we receive third-party complaints, or there's health and safety issues that are reported on an owner, and we see it common, we would also like the flexibility to inspect their inventory, not just that one specific unit.
So there are other assets that they have.
Correct. So a landlord who can own dozens of units or dozens of properties, we would make the determination at our discretion based on the referrals and the conditions of the units or the inspection history, whether or not we need to inspect the rest of their units in addition to just the one specific unit that we have the referral on.
What's your thinking there?
We would like to prevent landlords who do not maintain their units up to par. There are some landlords that have a history or a record of not maintaining their units up to par. Mm-hmm. Not all of our tenants are very vocal about that. So we, in the past, have only been able to go out and conduct the special inspections on the specific unit that was reported on. What we have found is that with those tendencies of specific owners, we see the problems not occurring just in the specific unit, but it could also be spread out amongst all of their units. So in order to protect our tenants and make sure that they're living in units that meet health and safety standards and housing quality standards, we would like to continue to go out and conduct inspections, if deemed necessary, on the entire inventory.
It seems a little draconian, but I'm trying to get my arms around it here. You want to be able to take a look and see how they're taking care of their other properties or another property of theirs as a way of trying to determine whether they're a landlord that we should be doing business with or not.
What we would like to do is to determine that they're meeting housing quality standards. If we do go out and conduct an inspection on the inventory and we find that it does not meet housing quality standards, we fail it. So when a unit is failed, we give an opportunity to the landlord to repair and bring that unit up to par. Mm-hmm. So we haven't severed our new relationships with owners. What we do when we conduct our quality control inspections is we set the standard that the owners have to meet up to par and bring the units up to standard. With our inspections on a biennial inspection cycle, this is just one more added way to make sure that the units are maintained throughout that time.
While you ponder your next question, I'm going to let Mr. Gentry butt in here for just a second. Go ahead.
I think we've got multiple speakers.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit of background. The great majority of our landlords are good people, they provide quality units, and this does not reflect a pattern of problems. And as is, of the near 1,500 vouchers we have out there, we have, about 700 landlords?
We have about 15,000 families that we assist, and we have close to 6,000 owners on the program.
So it's 15,000 units, 6,000 owners. You can do the math. You know, a lot of the units are singletons or two or three or four properties owned by small scale landlords. We, however, do engage with several larger scale landlords that have multiple units in the program. And we had an issue with one landlord, this past year where there were, multiple problems with units. And as Susanna said, a lot of our participants are scared to complain, afraid they'll lose their subsidy. So what we want to do is if we think there's a bad player and we have evidence from one or two inspections where there's a pattern of problems, we don't want to have to wait for somebody else to complain. We want that to be part of the agreement with the landlord and we can come in. In order to do that, and a little bit of further background, this is part of that age and mileage thing. The Section 8 voucher program has been around in various forms since 1975. And HUD has always required that an agency put together an administrative plan that reflects the requirements of federal regulation and also reflects the vagaries of the local situation to show HUD how the program is going to be operated and how the federal funds are going to be spent. There is some flexibility in there, but there are also some pretty hard and fast federal rules to follow, so the way to integrate those is an annual plan. It gets a bit redundant for us since we're also a move-in-to-work agency, And we have a move into work annual plan that you all approve every late winter, early spring. And there's some redundancy here, but we still, because of the regs, have to do this annual plan. One of the, and it allows us to update to changing local circumstances. So this one particular instance is a way to further protect our residents. Our belief and my belief is that what turns a voucher program into a housing program is the inspection. Short of an inspection is merely a cash transfer program, which is not a bad thing in itself, but it's the inspection that makes sure the families are housed in decent quality properties. And if we have reason to think a landlord is a problem because of the pattern of one or two or three units, we'd like to just go ahead and look at the other properties. This would not be employed unless we had reasonable reason to do it.
Mr. Tessin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look, I want to make it real clear. I believe that we need to make sure that the properties that we're engaged with for our tenants are kept to the highest standards. And I think that we should be expecting our landlords to keep them to those standards. This is a carte blanche matter, and I'm wondering, do you have certain thresholds that you would need to meet in order to, I mean, first of all, you're going to that property and you're making sure that that property is in compliance. If it's not in compliance, you give them, I suspect, time to remedy the situation. If that doesn't happen, then do you all of a sudden just go and start to check out all their other inventory, or is there thresholds that you must meet in order to get to this?
It is very rare that we fail an inspection and the owner does not bring the unit up to par. So our goal here is not to take owners off of the program. Our goal here is to make sure that they're meeting housing quality standards. So one of the things that we would look at if this was to be approved is what would be our thresholds. Like Mr. Gentry said, we are not looking to, take people off the program. We're looking to protect our residents. So some of the things that we would look at would be the instances of failed inspections across their inventory, not just a specific unit. The number of referrals that we get from our participants, third parties, things like that, and the severity of the actual items that fail within a unit. So we would take everything into consideration. But I would like to emphasize again is that the majority of our owners, once they have a failed inspection, they bring their units up to par. Because what would happen essentially is if they did not bring it up to par, then we would have the right to stop sending them the housing assistance payment.
Thank you for clarifying that. That even causes me more concern with the blank request here that's in this policy. I'd like to see us come back then. If, in fact, the majority of our landlords correct a problem that we identify, then I would like to see this come back to us and say, okay, if this happens, then we go to this stage here. I'd like to see those thresholds before this commission's asked to give carte blanche authority to go out and to check all their inventory. I don't think that's good public policy.
Okay, we can certainly do that, and we will set the
parameters. That's just my position. Others may feel differently.
Have you taken into account how much additional employee hours would be required for a more extensive inspection?
We have. We have an existing quality assurance program where we traditionally inspect, a percentage of the units that we have. Again, this is something that's a safe measure. We do not anticipate having to do many more inspections based on the results that we have, but we do have the staffing available to sustain any additional quality assurance inspections that may arise.
Could you account for maybe just a number of hours, additional hours that might entail?
We do not have a specific number of hours because, again, it would be based on the referrals that we would receive from third parties or the tenants. So it would really be based on what is brought to the Housing Commission's attention and also past inspection results, which we look at.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Spoon?
I would like to see also an appeal process that would be available to the owners. And in that appeal process, to have possibly a panel, or just some process where they can ask to have others outside of the rental assistance department review the steps that have been taken and the requirements that are being asked of them.
I also have some concerns here, mm-hmm. in that on the individual properties where a landlord's got a property over here and then another property 3 miles away or something like that, I don't see enough of a nexus between the properties to justify expanding it in those cases. But I don't think that's where you're headed. I think you're headed to the situations where we have multiple units at one site. We may only have one Section 8 tenant there, and so we're only going to inspect one property. But then there's the other properties there. But I would assume that there are other indicia of poor management other than what's just inside that unit that you or your inspectors would see when they go out there as they look around the grounds, they look around the alleyway, the trash. You know, that would, to me, would be part of the overall inspection. And I believe based on some limited experience in being a Section 8 landlord over times in the past, that is what happens. And so giving us the right to, require that they allow us access to a unit that we have no interest in, causes me a lot of concern. He said draconian. I'm using the term overreaching. And so I do think that before we can approve anything like that, we need to see more meat on the bones and to better understand and also to better limit the opportunities that you have to do that on it. So that's my particular position. Mr. Gentry, you had something you wanted to say?
What we can easily do, Mr. Chairman, is if it pleases the board, is, and I think we could ask you to approve the document with this provision pulled, and we can bring it back to you later more fully fleshed out with provisions. So that would please the board.
Commissioner Tussin?
I move approval. As indicated by Mr. Gentry.
Okay, so Commissioner Tussin has moved approval of approving this plan with this item that we've been discussing pulled from it so that it can be redefined, re-engineered, and brought forward. Commissioner Hubbard has seconded that motion in that manner. And Commissioner Davis? I'm sorry. It sounded like your voice. Well, and I thought, well, okay, her lips didn't move, but I heard her voice. So it was the other way around. All right, so Commissioner Davis has seconded that motion in that manner. Is that correct? Okay. Is it? Commissioner Spoon?
I just have a clarifying question. When you said the inventory, are you referring to the entirety of their inventory, those that do not receive Section 8 subsidies?
The inventory that is subject to the Section 8 rental assistance programs. Correct.
So when you go out to inspect, so say there's been a lot of complaints and you go out and decide, well, we're going to go and do an inventory inspection of their inventory, are you choosing random Section 8 units or are you choosing the ones that have made the complaints?
Well, we would certainly inspect the units where we received the complaints and the concerns that were reported, first and foremost. And again, if it was deemed necessary for us to conduct inspections on the rest of the Section 8 rental units, it would be a random selection of it. And then they would be applied to the housing quality standards that are set forth by HUD.
Commissioner Tussin?
I think you can get there. I think we need to lay out the, sure. I call them the thresholds. Which is, if, you know, this happens, if this infraction here, you know, I mean, if it continues, then we could go do this. I just think that needs to be clarified.
We can certainly do that, and we will bring it forth you again.
Any further comments, questions, discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of approving this this action with the proviso that has been added, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carried unanimously. Thank you. Next is item 106. Loan recommendation for Talmadge Gateway.
Yes, good morning, Chair Grambling. Commissioners, I'm Ann Kern, Vice President of Housing Programs and Business Development. With me is Ted Miyahara, Director of Housing Finance. We are pleased to bring before you item 106, which is a loan recommendation for Talmadge Gateway. This is the second funding recommendation under the Housing Commission's $10 million permanent supportive housing notice of funding availability that we issued last November. If approved, this action will bring our total commitment to $8.25 million and 123 permanent supportive housing units. And this exceeds our original goal by 23 permanent supportive housing units and would leave about $1.75 million available under our NOFA. As originally planned, our permanent supportive housing NOFA will be closed at the end of this month on June 30th. We're going to revise it and update it to incorporate improvements and then reopen it again this fall and have another $10 million available for additional permanent supportive housing investments. With that, Ted Miyahara, our Director of Housing Finance, will give you a presentation of this item.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. Staff recommendations before you this morning include a $4.8 million residual receipt loan and authorizing the President and CEO to execute documents, implement approvals, and adjust financing terms as necessary. As Ann said, this is the second loan recommendation coming out of Housing First San Diego. The current slide outlines our five-point plan. I'd like to point out that items 4 and 5 are completed, and item 3, the development of Hotel Churchill, broke ground just last month. The Housing Commission plans for deploying our capital funds and vouchers are well underway. I'm pleased to announce that the first project receiving funding from Housing First San Diego, Imperial Apartments, received a reservation of 9% tax credits this month, and the project is scheduled to break ground by year end. Talmadge Gateway is a 60-unit permanent supportive housing development serving seniors. It's located on El Cajon Boulevard in Euclid. This project is in Councilmember Emerald's district in the Kensington-Talmadge Community Plan area. Wakeland and City Heights CDC are co-developing the project. Wakeland and City Heights CDC are both qualified developers. They have most recently completed City Heights 10, which is a scattered site rehab project, and Wakeland recently broke ground on Atmosphere, which is a 205-unit downtown high-rise. The Housing Commission was lender on both City Heights 10 and Atmosphere. Housing First San Diego emphasizes permanent supportive housing paired with social services. St. Paul's PACE will provide in-kind services. The PACE program provides comprehensive services, including acute hospitalization, skilled nursing care, primary medical care, meals, physical, occupational, and speech therapies, and social services. Father Joe's Village is also interested in providing services to the development. The existing use of the site is commercial. The proposed development would be mixed use. The current development plans incorporate the existing commercial space along El Cajon Boulevard. The residential units will be along Euclid and the northern property boundary. The development is structured as a 9% tax credit project. Total development cost comes in just under $20 million. This equates to about $328,000 per unit. Our loan is $4.8 million, which equates to $80,000 per unit. Staff presented the item to our real estate committee on June 5th. We received direction to review costs further and scrub the numbers. Wakeland and the Housing Commission were able to reduce costs by approximately $330,000, which is equivalent to about $5,500 per unit. Real Estate Committee recommended that the loan be presented to the Housing Commission Board. The project is subject to prevailing wages. Al Geyer, the same contractor for San Diego Square and Hotel Churchill, provided Wakeland with a preliminary cost estimate. In addition, the Housing Commission engaged a third-party consultant to review construction hard costs. The consultant cost estimate came within 5% of the developer's estimate. Table 6 of the board report includes a project cost comparison chart. Hard cost is in line with similar projects recently approved by the board. The project rents will range from 30 to 50% of the area median income. Again, the tenant base is homeless seniors. The Housing Commission will subsidize the project with 59 project-based vouchers. If approved, the developer will apply for tax credits in July, and the project could potentially break ground as early as April 2016. That concludes our presentation. Representatives from Wakeland are here, and I'd like to open it up for questions.
And before we move forward with the questions, I will repeat the fact that this item was heard by the Real Estate Committee, and it was a subject of lengthy discussion, beating up on the developer to a certain degree, but was ultimately approved for submission to this body. Commissioner Tessin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The good news is that staff's working really hard to make sure that we are fine-tuning the costs, the hard costs on the project. I still think that the cost per unit overall, which I understand is there's things that are beyond our control at this point, is still a high number. I'm looking forward to hearing back from staff on the work that Mr. Gentry had started to do in Sacramento and trying to help find ways that we can lower the requirements that impact the cost overall. $328,000 a unit, to me, is still a high number. Again, I understand that it's beyond our control at this point, but I look forward to continuing to press on that.
And the committee agreed with you intensely. One of the biggest concerns, of course, is that we have prevailing wages required in here, and that's something that will require state action, possibly federal action, before we can eliminate that. And so I agree with you completely. Keep working on bringing the cost down. Any other questions or comments? It's been moved approval of the motion as submitted by Commissioner Tussin. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Spoon reacted first, so she will get credit for the second. And any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 107. Gee, you look familiar.
Good morning again. Ann Kern, Vice President, Housing Finance and Program Development with Ted Mayahara, Director of Housing Finance. Item 107 is requesting additional disposition actions regarding Hotel Metro. The Housing Commission has been involved with Hotel Metro for almost 30 years, since 1986, and we had some recent actions last year and are now bringing forward some additional actions which we believe are important for the Commission and the related project Alpha Square. With that, Ted will give you a presentation on the item.
Thank you, Ann. As Ann stated, the Hotel Metro item was previously approved by the Housing Commission and Housing Authority boards in June of 2013. The terms of the sale have changed, which is why we are bringing forward a new recommendation to the board. The city originally proposed to purchase the land from the Housing Commission. However, recent state legislation prevents the city from moving forward. Today's staff recommendations include, number one, approving the sale of Hotel Metro and delegating the president and CEO authority to enter into a purchase and sale agreement, sell the land and improvements, and approve a disposition policy specific to Hotel Metro. Number two, pay off a note held by the city in an amount up to $600,000. Number three, terminate the ground lease and cancel outstanding debt owed by the borrower in exchange for the improvements. And number four, amend the broker's contract to an amount not to exceed $300,000. There's also an additional separate city council action. Staff is recommending that the city delegate authority to the Housing Commission to provide final approval of the buyer and allow for the sale of Hotel Metro without additional Housing Authority action or approval. The Housing Commission board will authorize the sale for the terms and conditions set forth in the Hotel Metro disposition policy. The Housing Commission board will also approve the prospective buyer and terms of the sale transaction. And Housing Authority will have the opportunity to pull the item and hear it upon 7 days' notice. Some background and context for Hotel Metro. The Housing Commission purchased the land in 1986 and leased it to the original developer in 1989. Hotel Metro is a 195-unit SRO located on 13th Street between Island and Jay. The development was originally structured as affordable housing for minimum wage workers. Rents are tied to minimum wage salaries, and the rental income does not support operating costs. By today's standards, the project is not functional for affordable housing. The units are small, approximately 100 square feet. Tenants share common bathrooms. There are no kitchens, and there is insufficient community space. The City Housing Commission and Civic San Diego have been working on a replacement housing site for many years now. The replacement housing project, known as Alpha Square, broke ground in May of 2014, and the project is scheduled to be completed in the fall of 2015. Alpha Square is an all-around superior project. Units are about 2.5 times the size. They include individual kitchen and bathrooms, and common areas are included in the development for tenant services. I'd like to emphasize that Alpha Square is replacement housing for Hotel Metro. The city is not losing any affordable housing. This was an effort to replace Hotel Metro and was strategically planned over many years. Metro tenants will have the option to relocate to Alpha Square upon its completion. Tenants are not subject to any relocation costs. Tenants will receive relocation assistance and guidance throughout the entire process. In addition, the Housing Commission transferred over our affordability restrictions to Alpha Square in March of 2014. We are here today because the sale structure changed. Staff originally proposed that the city purchase the land and improvements. The city contemplated using low mod bonds to purchase the land. After negotiations with Civic, Senate Bill 341 passed, which requires low mod bond funding to be invested into housing at or below 80% of the area median income. The site is intended for future market rate housing. SB 341 precludes the city from selling the site to a market rate developer. During the pre-development phase of Alpha Square, Civic conducted extensive public outreach with the community, and there was a lot of interest about what was going to happen to Hotel Metro. The community was loud and clear about converting the site into some type of market rate use. In an effort to receive public support for Alpha Square, Civic committed to a future market rate housing use at the Metro sites. The Housing Commission intends to honor Civic's commitment and will engage a broker, market the property, and sell to a market rate developer. The borrower, San Diego SRO Limited Partnership, which is controlled by Alpha Project for the Homeless, will transfer over the improvements to the Housing Commission in exchange for cancellation of all debt and termination of the ground lease. The current debt, which is approximately $2 million, including the city's note, is expected to be recovered through the sale of the property, and we intend to recycle all of the sales proceeds back into affordable housing development. We will begin marketing the property in July and are targeting a year-end sale. That concludes our presentation. Representatives from Civic are here today in support of this item, and we'd like to open it up for questions.
Okay, before I open it up to the rest of the commissioners, I have one comment to make, and that is to correct something that is actually beyond my power to correct since it appeared in the Union Tribune, and that is, they did an article recently that said on page 2 of the article that when the Hotel Metro was rehabilitated that it would create 17 rooms for mentally challenged homeless people. Okay, well, what they were really referring to is something that's already occurred, and that is when we rehabilitated the Hotel Mason, we created 17 rooms for mentally challenged homeless persons. And the reporter changed his M-words from Mason to Metro and changed his tense from past to future. So that part of the article is not valid, and I just wanted to clear that for the record at this point. Commissioners, are there any questions, comments?
Commissioner Tessa? Thank you. Mr. Gentry, was this just, looking back, was this just a bad acquisition, or how did this, I mean, it certainly doesn't sound like the type of product that we want to have. I'm in favor of what we're being asked to do today, but I'm just curious.
I think the adjective bad is very fitting here, yes, sir. I think this is, I would use the word inadequate as well. I think this property reflected probably the thinking 25 years ago, and it does not reflect the thinking now nor the standards we employ now. Yeah, just think about it. These units are 100 square feet, for goodness sake, 10 by 10. That's nothing. That's not even a decent hotel room. Bathrooms in the hall, which for any population, but this population in particular, makes for a management nightmare. There is significant deferred maintenance because the financial structure on this was not well thought out either. And basically, I would describe this building as not worth saving, as opposed to, say, to something older and was out of use, like the Hotel Churchill I'm looking at right now, is worth saving and rehabbing. This property is not worth saving. So it needs to come down. I think if we were to try to rehab it and keep it for any use, it would be good money after bad. And it's just, we don't need to keep it. So, yes, sir, I think bad is a good word. And I think, too, let me emphasize something. You may hear some disagreements about from some people in the community. We intend to honor some promises to East Village neighborhood that were made by the old CCDC and Civic on the use of this property. As Ted just indicated to you, everyone living here is going to be taken care of with the new Alpha Square. Nobody's displaced. We're replacing 195 units that are 10 by 10 with 201 units that are much bigger, that will be habitable and decent and standard. And so we're not losing resources, but you may hear some squawks from some of the advocates that we need to reuse this for the homeless. And our position, staff's position, is that this needs to come down. It's not worth saving. And we need to honor the promises made by the city to the neighborhood and let this come back in a market-based form.
Council, I need to ask a question. What is the distance that must be adhered to in terms of my residence, which is in East Village, and the proximity of the Hotel Metro?
500 feet from the closest point of the property that's in question.
Okay. And I should know this, but I don't. And the distance from corner to corner of the standard city block is?
They're either generally 300 feet is a standard block, and the streets in that area, I think, are 100 feet within the right-of-way.
I make it. Okay. Exactly. Just wanted to make sure before I said what I'm about to say, because I agree with comments made by Commissioner Tussin and also a couple of comments made by the president, Mr. Gentry, and that is that living in the area, I'm very familiar with it, and it is it's a bad egg in the neighborhood. To be nice about it. And what I can say is if our Section 8 people would like to have the power to go out and extend their search capabilities in terms of identifying substandard properties, I think the rest of our property division needs to make sure, and maybe we need to change any of our agreements to allow us stronger emphasis in this area. But it's an embarrassment to think that this property belongs to us in any way, and that we have, by implication, by arm's length requirements or whatever, have allowed a property to denigrate to such a poor condition and still have it on our official inventory. And I'm ultimately going to vote yes on this proposal now that I can, but I'm also very concerned that we don't allow any other properties to exist in our name in this condition. And I think we need to have an extremely diligent investigation by our property department to make sure that we identify any that fall to this standard. And then begin to pressure to the full extent of any contractual agreements or the law that we can. Any other comments, questions?
Are there any other properties in the portfolio like this?
So the our department's, one of our goals for the next fiscal year is to implement new protocols and inspect not only our loans, but our density bonus units, our inclusionary units, and our tax-exempt bond units. And so, yes, I believe that there are some smaller developments that are going to need, you know, such as maybe the City Heights 10, where you did some type of reinvestment and using tax credits and bonds. But we will identify whether there are in the next year going forward, and we will address that.
Well, in the past year, I've identified a couple of properties that were up here for loan modification, loan renewals, that I believed were substandard. And again, I think we need to be extremely diligent in finding these and in getting this corrected. Mr. Gentry?
Three comments, Mr. Chairman. The first one is that in the last 7 years, we have brought this board nothing but good product. And I think there's nothing recent that would cause anybody any embarrassment. I'll also say that in terms of the product developed in the past, there's nothing else that would be at the same level as a Hotel Metro in terms of its decrepit physical shape. We've got some other properties that need some money invested in it, but nothing like this. So I think the answer to that is a qualified no. Third comment is that you'll see we have workshop sessions for the board today on two topics. One is the cost containment issue that Mr. Tassin mentioned a while ago. The other is our efforts on water conservation. The workshop session we have planned for you next month in July will deal with what our real estate department's been doing over the last year or so in developing a new risk rating system, which is a new system that we will use to evaluate every property that we either own or have an investment in that will give us hard data going forward. So I think with those three comments, I think we don't have another risk like this out there, but we will have a system implemented over the next year to make sure that we know we don't.
Okay. My rebound, and that is that it's been very clear that this property has been managed by a manager who is now going to have the opportunity to manage a brand new property located on Market Street. A few more units, same tenant base. Okay. I think it needs to be made very clear to this manager that we're going to watch very carefully, and that if we see this property, the new property, being what I'm going to say is neglected, and I'm going to even go so far as to say mismanaged, that this manager needs to understand that we're not going to tolerate it in the future. And please convey that if that person isn't in the room, but please convey that to them. Okay? So, is there a motion? Commissioner Tustin has moved approval. Is there a second? Commissioner Hubbard has seconded that. This time I saw her lips move. Any further discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor say aye. Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Okay, I believe the next item is a workshop. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Please proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Chair Gramling, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, Mr. Christensen. We have two workshops for you, and with your permission, I think we'd like to do the water conservation presentation first. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and Council. My name is Jennifer McKinney. I am the Vice President of Real Estate Operations in the Real Estate Division. I'm pleased to share with you today the agency's progress to date, as well as our future plans that support the State of California mandated water restrictions. Water conservation has been an elevated issue for several years due to the current historic drought. Most are familiar with the recent headlines and attention surrounding the continued state of emergency issued as a result of depleted water supplies. Recently, the governor, by executive order, and for the first time in history, directed the State Water Resources Control Board to implement mandatory water reductions in cities and towns across California to reduce water usage by up to 25% due to decreased water levels in most of California's reservoirs. On May 5th, the California State Water Resources Control Board set the water use reduction amounts for the various regions in the state. Due to the fact San Diego has already put a number of conservation strategies in place, and because the economy relies heavily on tourism, the reduction for the city of San Diego was decreased to 16%. The law went into effect immediately thereafter on June 1, 2015. The executive order also outlined other terms that include additional reporting requirements for water agencies to state regulators, increased enforcement of the law, streamlined government response to the review and decision-making process of water infrastructure projects, and a commitment to invest in new technologies. Furthermore, the order directs the creation of a temporary statewide consumer rebate program to replace old appliances with more water and energy efficient models, and supports additional turf replacement programs through local government. The Housing Commission is on the list of top 20 users in the city. The public agencies and private organizations on the list were invited by the mayor's office to participate in the stakeholder discussions as this was unfolding. Concurrently, Housing Commission staff was forming an internal task force to ensure that the agency was dedicating resources to this important initiative. The task force developed a three-point plan that will help the agency meet the new requirements. I'd like to point out that some measures the agency is implementing are entirely voluntary and are considered above and beyond the state-issued mandatory measures. Before I delve into our actions, I'd like to share a brief overview of our current real estate portfolio. We have grown with the addition of Village North Senior Garden Apartments to our portfolio. The San Diego Housing Commission now owns and or manages 2,341 units within over 150 properties in the city of San Diego. In addition, the Housing Commission's nonprofit affiliate, Housing Development Partners, wholly owns another 302 units. This is a diverse portfolio. The agency's housing stock contains an SRO, several single-family homes, duplexes, multifamily unit buildings with 4, 6, and 8 units, up to our largest community, Belden Village, which is 243-unit garden-style apartments in the Linda Vista neighborhood. The commission headquarters here at Smart Corner is also part of this varied portfolio. For our newer board members, I'd like to share with you an image of our Google map that pinpoints all of our properties throughout the city. You can view this in greater detail with full features on our website at www.sdhc.org. There are over 100 irrigation systems in place, 74 laundry facilities, and 3 swimming pools. Water costs account for a sizable part of our annual operating budget. Actual costs in fiscal year 14 were approximately $1.1 million. Several years ago and prior to the drought, the property management team implemented a number of tactics aimed at reducing water consumption. The majority of the irrigation systems have been centralized in cloud-based systems, allowing us to use data from local weather stations in the city to optimize watering efficiencies. Low-flow shower heads, faucet aerators, and toilets are installed during preventative maintenance visits or upon turnover of the unit. The maintenance technicians and property managers conduct regular periodic inspections to ensure there are no leaks or running toilets. Washers and dryers in the community laundry facilities are ENERGY STAR rated and water efficient as well. The team sources water-wise plantings or mulch if turf is ever removed. I'd like to share with you the details of our three-phased approach to additional water conservation measures. Our goal is to meet and exceed the restriction mandate, and we want to achieve this in the most cost-effective and environmentally sound way. On June 1st, a plan was launched to eliminate irrigation of turf at the San Diego Housing Commission-owned affordable housing properties. We refer to this as Going Gold and hope that our neighbors in the community follow suit. We have partnered with the City of San Diego's San Diegans Waste No Water campaign and are proudly displaying signage they have provided on the lawns at the community, similar to what you see in this picture. We are now in the midst of phase two, which is centered around engaging our many constituents. A mailing was sent in the month of May that apprised our residents of the new state law and let them know how they could help in our campaign to reduce water consumption. We shared tips to reduce consumption and encouraged them to continue to report leaks immediately. Not only was this flyer mailed to the residents at over 2,300 Housing Commission-owned communities, it was also mailed to more than 14,000 households that participate in the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Program and emailed to more than 5,600 private landlords who rent to the Housing Choice Voucher participants. Additionally, the flyer was hand-delivered at the HDP communities. 275 Housing Commission employees received the same message, with information regarding the new state law and information on conservation techniques. The message also included a newly established way to report concerns and leaks via email at sdhcwastenowater@sdhc.org. We have received notifications from residents regarding consumption concerns. Additional resources were listed too, such as the City of San Diego and San Diego County Water Authority's websites dedicated to this endeavor. The third and final phase involves long-term planning to take place over the course of several months. The task force is dedicated to finding innovative, cost-effective ways to operate more efficiently with less water. The team will continue to explore and implement outdoor conservation techniques. For example, the property management team will further analyze how the pools operate and how they are maintained. We also intend to continue our partnership with the City of San Diego's Public Utilities Department. This relationship has been invaluable to our portfolio management group as they sort the historical data for hundreds of our properties. The city's Public Utilities Department has a collaborative spirit, and we appreciate this relationship. Our third phase will also involve more detailed strategic planning approach as it relates to the landscaping. We recognize that gold will go out of style rather quickly, and there is a need to implement a sustainable landscaping plan. We are actively reviewing rebate opportunities as they become available, while at the same time looking at our fiscal year budget to see how we can best leverage all resources. On behalf of the Real Estate Operations Group, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity provided today to share with you our progress on this very important initiative. I'd also like to thank the Real Estate Operations team and the internal task force dedicated to this endeavor. Several of them are here with me today, and we're available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Commissioner Ortosa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very interesting that we're one of the top 20 users. Not surprising. A couple questions. Have we noticed in our inspections of the properties that the low-flow devices have been removed by tenants? Has that been a problem for us?
On occasion, and we're investigating ways to prohibit that from happening. There are new devices on the marketplace that can be installed, for instance, with low-flow shower heads. There are devices that can be installed just behind the wall So we're investigating those. It would make it a little more difficult.
Yeah. Have you also investigated or considered flow meters? I know that, and I own rental properties, I understand that many properties in previous years were built without water meters for the individual units. Have you considered water flow meters to measure consumption at the tenant level?
That's a very good question. We are considering everything at this point. Nothing's off the table. So I believe our task force is looking into a number of those types of items, and I'll make certain it's on the next meeting agenda for discussion. Thank you.
I'm going to direct a question to someone who's in the audience right now on a related subject. Ken? And for those of you who don't know, Ken is the president of Wakeland Housing and is teamed with us on several projects throughout several communities throughout the overall San Diego City community. Ken, have you had an opportunity to take a look in the design phase at how much, if any, increase in overall cost there might be incurred if we switch to a gray water system?
No, we really, let me just say this. In terms of the whole water question and everything in terms of, Title 42 and all that, we, on every project we design, we're asking all those questions. We try to design our projects at a minimum to LEED, gold at least, and if not platinum. And so it does kind of address all those issues. I really don't have any. I do know that I'm hearing in our own organization that water costs are going up and increasing a lot, and it's causing us some problems on our properties. But we have always, certain last 5-10 years at least, we've really been asking this question early on every project in the design phase to figure out how we can, cut the usage.
Well, I believe in the foreseeable future here, we're going to have some gray water requirements imposed upon us. And I'm not only interested in terms of our new construction, but whether or not retrofitting any of our existing communities, the cost of doing that might be prohibitive or not. And I figured you're closer to construction than I am anymore.
At this point, in terms of anything that we own in terms of converting to gray water, no. We really haven't gotten into that at all. Again, that's all we do all that on the front end on new construction, obviously.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions for the staff here? Okay, thank you very much, and we'll look forward to future reports updates. Switching sides there? You're going to the middle. Okay.
Good morning, Chair Gramling, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, Mr. Christensen. I'm Debbie Ruane, Senior Vice President with the Real Estate Division, and we're pleased to present to you our continuing progress that we're making at your direction on addressing and changing the costs of delivering affordable housing. This presentation is being presented to you in advance of the Smart Growth and Land Use meeting next week, where we are going to roll out our framework. I'll go through the PowerPoint, and I do apologize in advance. It is very detailed. We will be rolling this into a report that will be printed and completed sometime in the next month or two, but this is our attempt to keep you apprised of our progress and our direction and our findings today, which we are very excited by. I'd also like to thank the staff who have made this possible. This is Wendy DeWitt's work, Ann Kern's work, Mike Pavko, Ted Miyahara, and our consultants, Lazar Development Consultants, Kaiser Marston, and Emmy Shea. We're going to review how we got here, what we see as the problem and its components, how we envision our opportunity to impact housing costs and production, and what needs to happen next. Over the past years, you, our board, have continually asked, why is affordable housing so expensive? And through workshops such as this, we have endeavored to explain why it's different and why it's expensive. We did a pretty good job teaching you, and then you said, okay, so now do something about it. And so that is what we are endeavoring to do. We showed you how the drivers are the tax credit and bond programs and state law and federal guidelines. And so what we did is we created a report. Our analysis was further broadened to expand our focus to housing overall, not just affordable housing. San Diego ranks third in the state behind the San Francisco and LA areas in terms of a housing crisis. Our population is increasing and our housing isn't meeting that pace. Furthermore, our incomes aren't matching our rent levels. It takes 2.5 full-time minimum wage jobs to afford the average two-bedroom unit in San Diego. And we know that we're just one city in the state. And as we discuss state law, we need to be cognizant that other municipalities can and should participate in our efforts, and that's part of this plan as well. Education and relationships are our keys. Our framework was created with the staff and with a very strong influence and help from Lazar Development Consultants. And this framework component has three parts. One is to lower the cost to develop housing. The second one is to increase housing production. And the third is to quantify the link to economic growth. The steps we took are to solicit input from the stakeholders. The stakeholders are you. They are our development partners, such as Wakeland. They are city council members. As you know, we've also been actively involved in contributing to the tax credit and CIDLAC communities up in Sacramento. We've engaged Kaiser Marston to refresh construction cost data. We collaborated with Lazar Development Consultants to create the framework. Mr. Gentry co-founded the Coalition for Housing and Jobs. And we've coordinated our advocacy of legislation with this coalition, as well as met directly with the state treasurer's office to voice our support and advise them of our efforts here in San Diego. We want to show, we want you to know that a key component of our framework does include specifics. We tasked Kaiser Marston to gather specific cost data for us. On a special note, what's interesting to us is they found that no other city in the state of California is addressing cost containment. San Diego is on the cutting edge. This is an example of an excerpt from a report that we produce. Independent of the Kaiser Marston cost numbers, we've been working with Lazar Development Consultants and Emmy Shea on assembly bills and legislation that drive funding. This is an example of the matrix our team uses, and when we meet with the Coalition for Jobs and Housing, we review all pending legislation and send support letters with multiple signatures or place it on a monitor status. The Coalition, along with the BIA, the Chamber of Commerce, the Taxpayers Association, the Apartment Association, Biocom, and several others sign these letters, and it carries great weight in Sacramento. To date, three assembly bills have passed through the assembly and are on their way to the Senate, and another has passed the Senate and is on its way to an assembly, all that we have actively been involved in supporting. Our research shows us that housing affordability is constraining economic growth. As I said before, this is a big issue. It does affect all of us in the state, and not just the affordable housing community, but the market rate sector as well. From The Economist and the McKinsey Global Institute, we found a blueprint for addressing the global affordability housing challenge. We learned that housing affordability ties directly to economic growth, and that by focusing on the cost and systematic burdens, we could cut development costs drastically and close the affordability gap. The Kaiser Marston Affordable Housing Cost Comparison Study has been organized into five major categories. They are affordable housing costs, comparison from market rate to affordable costs, major cost impacts, a survey of other jurisdictions, and what potential changes could be made. KMA reviewed the affordable housing cost study that was performed by the State Department of Housing and Community Development, which was completed last October. These are their key findings in summary form. While research on some cost factors was reported as inconclusive or not containing support data, we did find that some significant cost factors were able to be calculated, and the results of the analysis represent statewide metrics. Next, a cost comparison between a market rate and affordable housing development was done using two prototypes. One is a garden-style apartment with surface parking, and one was a stacked flat apartment with subterranean parking. The market rate costs assume a plain vanilla deal, so no brownfields, no prevailing wage, very, very simple. What Kaiser Marston did is they compared that to one of our affordable housing deals. The market rate baseline numbers were then compared to five actual housing commission housing projects, utilizing the actual costs at the time they were built. We received confirmation of our findings that affordable housing is indeed more expensive for specific reasons. Following the project-by-project comparison, the study then identifies and categorizes the major cost impacts. The major impacts are placed into three categories: tax credit and bond program requirements, community goals, and revitalization catalysts. An example of the state program requirements that impact costs are the tax credit requirements for site amenities that garner the necessary competitive points for the applicant, such as near transit sites, parks, libraries, etc. Selecting these premium sites does indeed have an impact on the land acquisition costs. Community goals that impact direct costs in a project are things such as exterior aesthetics, community amenities, ground floor commercial, those kinds of things. And revitalization goals that impact costs include urban site locations, four or more stories with structured parking, mixed-use buildings, and demolition of existing structures. We also surveyed other jurisdictions to see what they're doing about costs and what their best practices are. The study surveyed Civic San Diego here at home, as well as other major California cities, Los Angeles, Napa, Sacramento, San Francisco, and San Jose. We found that no other city is actively engaged in reducing the cost of affordable housing, and we thought that you would be interested to know where San Diego falls in comparison. San Diego is, on average, $263,000 a unit, which is below the overall tax credit average of $288,000, below Los Angeles County at $315,000, and below San Francisco at $406,000. Concurrent with our research request to Kaiser Marston, Lazar, and Emmy Shea, we've been actively supporting the new leadership at CIDLAC and TCAC and have shared through our template in one-on-ones and in group settings in Sacramento how the rules impact housing costs. We've shared with them the unintended consequences of incentivizing narrow radii for site location, exceeding Title 24 energy efficiency requirements, and requiring site amenities that may not be needed. The state governance overrides local jurisdiction, and we feel sometimes that San Diego knows what's best for San Diego, not necessarily Sacramento. Some of the areas we focused on are the physical components, such as amenities, efficiencies, and value engineering. And we want to know how we can lower costs. So we've developed a grid of approximately 60 action items. We decided to hand that out in a matrix and save you from putting that detail into a PowerPoint. The matrix, I believe you all have it, do they? It's a legal size page. Those are the 60 findings that we have collected to date. What we've done is we've listed them along with who the responsible jurisdiction is for addressing them. So we've got some of those are federal requests. Some are state, and some are local. And within the local column, that means the City of San Diego, the Housing Commission, the Development Services Department. It's a comprehensive list. It's not complete. We're going to continue to add to it. But our intent in the report will be to outline these are the things that can be done to address lowering the costs of affordable housing and housing and working with our partners to create an action plan to change some of them. Let me move on because I know this is a lot. We realize these are large topics to incorporate. We also recognize that not everything is feasible. There's going to have to be some trade-offs. And I'm moving on to the increasing housing production. More of the examples from the matrix are listed here. I won't read through all of them. And lastly, and primarily, showing the impact of the lack of affordable housing affordability and how it stunts economic growth, job creation, environmental health, and the future of our city. This is everyone's problem. It's not just the affordable housing community. Locally, we need to establish our housing production goals and work collaboratively with our public and private sector partners to accelerate housing production. Without acceptance and ownership of our target production, we won't succeed. Our political leaders can support us by enabling changes at the city level and within their community groups. Importantly, we need to create and support a culture of innovation at the public sector level without fear of reprisal for risk-taking. The private sector isn't going to risk their returns. Here at the public sector is where we may be able to innovate a little bit more. Our outreach has already preliminarily gone to the State Treasurer's Office, the Speaker of the House, and other Sacramento notables. The phrase in Sacramento is that all the stars are in alignment to tackle this problem and with the new governance and local interest. We're proud to be at the forefront of this, and we thank this board for that initial direction. This is a nod to our contributors in the last slide in the presentation. Matrix is, as I mentioned, something we're going to continue to work on. Within a month or shortly thereafter, we intend to publish a report that defines our intent, contains all of our findings, and charts our action plan with our team and our partners. We recognize the magnitude of this initiative and are excited by the prospects of actually impacting housing affordability and spurring production and positively impacting our economy. Furthermore, we want to make our funds go further and house more families who need it as the need grows every day. I thank my team, especially Wendy and Ann and Mike and Ted and their folks, and our consultants, Paul Mara with Kaiser Marston, Jennifer Lassar with Lassar Development, and Mary Ellen Shea. And most of all, thank you for tasking Mr. Gentry and us with changing the future. Thank you.
Mr. Gentry, you had something to say?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think if the matrix that is in front of you all is the meat of the issue, and it is huge. For years, you all have been fussing at us, the cost is too high, and we've responded, well, that's the way it works. Well, this is the way it works. And I think the work that's gone into creating this matrix by Debbie and her people, and particularly Wendy, is just huge. I've never seen this produced anywhere else. And in particular, if you look at the top of the first page, go about two-thirds of the way across and look at responsible entity, that will tell you where the responsibility lies. So that if somebody down the street fusses at us about cost, and it's under local discretion, we can say, well, change it. Or we can point the finger at the state or the federal government. There's nobody to point the finger at, then we point it back at ourselves. But I think if you look at the complexity here, what has happened to the development process over the years is that it is not like a well-designed edifice. It's like a shack that's been added onto every year for about 30 years. So it's got a lot of data frequently conflicting with itself and just a lot of stuff here. So what this will allow us to do, though, is to take a global issue, narrow it down to the particulars, and then answer the so what question, but so what do you do about it? We, as Debbie indicated, we've already had some considerable contact in Sacramento where we've been well received. You are, although you are getting the first peek at this document itself, we expect the chart to be refined over time and changed. We will be presenting this was the first run of the report that Debbie just gave you that we will be reprising to the city Smart Growth Committee meeting next Wednesday morning on the 1st. Commissioner Tassin has volunteered to be there with us just to present the board's commitment to this issue as well. And then from that, as Debbie indicated, we will have a formal report completed sometime later in the summer, which will stake out what we believe, what we want to do, and it will be, we have been told by folks in Sacramento, valuable to the folks up there as they change state policy, which we've been told is coming and will be significant. So this is presented for your consideration. It's an organic document that will change over time. And this is because of you all. Thank you.
Commissioner Tassin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Gentry and staff. I want to thank you for taking to heart what we've asked you to do. This is a real concern. And when we look at the lists that you have, it's transparently clear that for us in government, we're our own worst enemies here, both at the federal, state, and at the local level. And so I liked especially that you've given the prioritization of this, and I hope that as we go about this, that we're not going to get everything that we asked for, but I'd like for us to try to prioritize the biggest bang for the buck that we can get as we go through this. The other thing is that I think that we need to be very bold in talking about this. We're often criticized by the media for the cost of housing, and we need to be able to tell the story that, you know, not only what the requirements are by the federal, state, and local governments, but also what this housing commission is attempting to do. We need to be bold in telling that story, because it's only that way that we're going to be able to move the needle.
Okay. First of all, I do want to thank Debbie and your staff for all the good work that's been done. I believe there's only one of the three consultants, outside consultants, that are present. Two are here?
I believe Paul Mara from Kaiser Marston and Jennifer Lassar.
I knew Jennifer was here. Paul, I didn't see you hiding back there. I'd like to thank you, both of you as well, for your contributions to this overall effort. To expand just a little bit on what Commissioner Tassin said, as well as what Mr. Gentry said, and that is I believe that your study indicated that possibly as much as 40% of the total cost of producing this new housing is the result of government delays, government fees, time delays, and so seeing this is great. But now that our next effort is we've got to start working with the city and all of its leadership to try to that's an area that they have control. It's local. We need to work with them and start really emphasizing the need that they've got to start streamlining, at least in the area of affordable housing, because otherwise that's going to never exist, affordable housing.
One small clarification. The 40% number came from a study done by Dr. Lynn Reeser at Point Loma Nazarene University through the Fromanian Institute, and it was 40% of the costs were attributable to regulatory issues.
I may not have attributed it right, but we got the number right, so we need to work on it. And thank you very much for this as well. I do have one additional question for you to come back with at some point. You indicated that San Diego's cost of housing on a per unit basis was lower than the other cities. I'd like to know what it is on a per square foot cost as well.
We'll bring that to you.
Thank you. Commissioner Cerny?
Yes, I have a question. How confident or what kind of an impact can we have that the state and the city is on board with really seriously, honestly, you know, going out there, taking the risk and reducing in the areas that they are in charge of? How confident are we that they are buying into this?
As our front man on that area, Mr. Gentry?
I feel very confident they will receive this. We'll see what happens. You know, there have been a lot of complaints from the city council as well, just as there have been from you all, that this is excessive, the cost that is, and it needs to change. And we've heard the same thing out of the state. Let me deal with the state first. We are fortunate in that the state treasurer changed first of the year. And Mr. Chung has indicated that affordable housing cost reform is one of the two major issues in his administration, the other being infrastructure. He's given this serious consideration. Also, the two people working for him and heading up CIDLAC and TCAC are both brand new, one of whom comes from our equivalent counterpart agency in Sacramento, and the other one coming from, who is a long-term aide in the General Assembly dealing with housing issues. And they have already indicated to Debbie and me, and they also appeared before you all, Debbie, reminded me back in January, I think it was. They were here and came over and spoke to this board. They've indicated to us they're looking seriously at some reforms, and they're going to take our recommendations into consideration. So if you look at what we're hearing from down the street from the city council, if you look at what we're hearing from the appropriate regulators in Sacramento, I think we're going to have an impact. Now, is it going to make everything change and all the problems go away? Likely not. But I think that it'll have a significant impact, and I think where I was skeptical last summer when we talked about this that we can make a change, I think now we're going to. I really do. Our timing on this is excellent.
May I add one thing? We also have incorporated comments from six of our city council members into that matrix. We received letters from them with wish list items they'd like us to tackle. They're in there. And we've been meeting with regularly the Independent Budget Analyst's Office, and they are alongside us in this presentation.
Absolutely. And if I could add, the weakness on many other reports, and I will include the report from Point Loma University a month or so ago that indicated that the cost of all housing was kicked up by 40% because of various governmental requirements, mainly to do with delays and burden related to that. Nowhere have I seen a listing of answering the so what question. They're saying, what can you do to change it? Everybody says, well, that's awful. You ought to do something. But then when you don't point out the what, it kind of goes away or gets left on the shelf. This is unique. I've not seen this. And I think this is going to give us, the royal us, the whole housing commission, a lot of credibility in addressing this issue. And as Debbie indicated to you a couple of times in the report, there is nobody else on a local level addressing this issue. So I think our timing is good.
Commissioner Spoon?
Well, I would like to say also it's a remarkable piece of work that you have all put together, and I thank you very, very much for doing it. It's just incredible, all of you. What I would like to see included is like a call to action, a simplified call to action. You know, when I look at these 60 points, I say, oh, my God, I think we should just start over. You know, just scrap it and start over, because obviously this has been created by committee, you know, over 40 years, right? But if you could condense this in some simplified format with, you know, with bullet point steps, you know, that those, for those individuals that are not as knowledgeable in the area can follow and can understand, And as Commissioner Tussin said, hit the high points, you know, where you get the most bang for your buck. The other thing I think is we need to support the electeds that are knowledgeable, you know, in this area. We all know who they are. And that they will be tasked with spreading the message.
We agree.
Yeah, repetition. Lots of it. So that we can begin to get this embedded in their consciousness. Thank you. Commissioners, I believe we've completed our agenda for the day. Is there any last comments by any of you? Seeing no indication of such, I'll take a motion to adjourn. Commissioner Surdy has moved to adjourn. Commissioner Davis has seconded that motion. And all in favor?
Aye.
This meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.